San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from La Vie, that's right, La Valencia Hotel in beautiful La Jolla. With 50,000 watts of power, we're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, out to the desert. And time to introduce the main man of the hour. He is a marathon runner extraordinaire, a CPA. He is a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable. It's always hard to say. He's a family office advisor to several high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you on this beautiful Sunday night?
I am marvelous. Just had a great dinner here at La Valencia.
We certainly did. The Mediterranean room, looking out at the ocean. It doesn't get much better, does it?
And I had my signature grilled cheese.
Yes.
To make it just
ready. And tomato soup with the, I mean, I don't know, they put all these wonderful things in there. They've got so many flavors going on here.
I'll tell you guys a funny story about grilled cheese. Happened here.
But
not on air. I won't tell it.
What a week, though. Hey, Roberta Gonzalez, she's the weather anchor up at San Francisco's CBS TV5. Started her career here, but she's been up there 18 years. And prior, she was about 5 years in Chicago's WMAQ TV5, which is their NBC station. But anyway, she was out here for a short visit, invited her to the Ocean View Terrace, had a glass of wine. I think it was Tuesday afternoon. And boy, she was just going bananas. You know, up in San Fran, they don't get much sunshine like we do. So she was snapping all kinds of pictures, and a couple at the table, a few tables over from Marin County, they were down here for a sunshine getaway too. So they recognized her and they were just talking up a storm. But she just had a great time. And thank you to Mark DiBella, who brought out a complimentary pink fleece La Vie jacket and presented it to her.
Yeah, I saw the picture. That's neat. Mark Twain once said that the coldest winter I ever spent was one summer in San Francisco.
And just a quick shout-out, Rick Ballinger, who's a friend of mine in local media here, he has been working on a lifetime project called The Spaceman of Ocean Beach. And he's
a lifetime project, much like the Dr. Seuss plaque for
yes.
You, Joe.
No, but this guy's a real interesting character. Just go to Google Spaceman of Ocean Beach. He's going to have a reading of his screenplay down in the Ocean Beach Playhouse, I believe next Friday and Saturday or next weekend. So check it out, and it's really great. But what another great week here, her 18th year here, Richard.
World Team Tennis, our good friend.
The Junior Nationals.
Our friend Billie Jean King was in town.
Billie Jean King, the living legend, my gosh.
2009 Presidential Medal of Freedom Award winner.
In the White House with her mother there. What a proud moment that must have been. It's the highest civilian award you can get.
In this country, that's right.
Yeah.
She's got one.
And, of course, on and now with all the other accolades. Well, we're going to actually be doing a show on her and on your book September 7th because, as they say on another network, I'll mention it's PBS. American Masters is doing their an episode on Billie Jean King. It's the first time, I think there's over 180 titles, first time they've ever done an athlete, and they couldn't have picked a better one. But it'll be 90 minutes, 8 o'clock till 9:30 on September 10th on PBS. So
it's exciting stuff.
Yeah.
And that's on the heels of New Black Films doing Battle of the Sexes, a very well-received and well-reviewed film.
So,
in the UK.
So we'll have all that information September 7th. But actually, if you go to iymoney.com, you'll get a little sneak preview because we did interview Billy this week, and we've got a great 16 minutes up there. So I think you'll hear her discuss.
So did you go to the finals on Thursday, Joe, of her tournament?
I did.
Do you remember who won?
I believe Wisconsin Cheeseheads won.
The Cheeseheads won.
Yeah,
okay.
These kids are 14 to 18, come from all over the country, and compete in this Junior Nationals tournament, and they just have a blast.
But it's neat stuff because it's team tennis, so you have singles, boys and girls, doubles, mixed double. So it turns what's been an individual sport into a team sport, which is really, really neat. Because one of the challenges, I think, with tennis is it's such an individual sport. It doesn't promote collaboration and teamwork and working with others. Her format definitely does that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it makes it much more interesting for the kids who are playing to be part of a team than it does in terms of your standard single elimination tournament format.
You know, sometimes, she said, sometimes you lead, sometimes you follow, but you're all pulling for each other. And it's really, I didn't know all the rules. I'm watching some of this thing. You know, when you hit a let, you play.
Yeah, I know. You play the let.
You play the let. I didn't know that. I mean, they really.
Well, you know, Joe, tennis can take a long time.
I know. So they've.
So they have things in there to make this game move because, you know, people's attention spans aren't what they used to be.
Right, right. But I didn't know that. And then, of course, after deuce, the next point wins. So it's.
Right, yeah, it's called no ad scoring.
Right. So the games move along. And but it was quite a day. Had some media out there. I guess that was Wednesday, right? Including.
Yeah, we
us.
Did our interview Wednesday. The finals were on. Thursday. She spoke to the kids Wednesday, spoke to the donors on Tuesday.
Tuesday breakfast.
It was a busy week, put it that way. And then the women's tournament was going on at La Costa.
Well, she certainly has a commanding presence and her history and everything else. And remember the one question I asked her? I said, if let's say you got injured and couldn't continue in tennis, what career you think you would have gone into? She goes, she says, oh, I don't know. You know, president of the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, she always thinks.
And she starts at the top. And she stays there. So much tennis, I couldn't go watch the tennis today. Let's see. The semifinals match, Victoria Azarenka beat Anna Ivanovic. Our SEO and website superstar Courtney Lauber had my tickets. She's sitting over there listening to the radio show.
Uh-huh.
It was a great match, right, Courtney? She's nodding her head, yes. But,
so
Azarenka in three.
So do we want to talk about your book at all, or do we want to get into the show?
Well, briefly on my book. I wrote a book called So What's Your Play? How Billie Jean, Bobby, and Blindness Begat Tolerance. It's a book about my experiences. When I was 14 and 15, I was employed by Bobby Riggs as his scrapbook maker. Created, I guess it was 11 scrapbooks, over 2,500 pages on 11.5 by 17 paper of all that was going on in 73 with the match against Margaret Court and then, of course, the famous Battle of the Sexes against Billie Jean King. And I only say all of this because it's a lead into talking about books. My book, it's up on Amazon, but we're going to be doing a big release in early September. It's a great book because it also chronicles my losing my eyesight, going blind, coming back as a long-distance endurance runner as opposed to a tennis player, creating a foundation. We're expecting to host over 15,000 people this Thanksgiving morning. My joke is, if you think you have a lot of people coming over for Thanksgiving, I probably have you beat.
Because this is the turkey trot.
It's the Oceanside Turkey Trot. Right. And so talking about these experiences and what was going on in 73 with the women's liberation movement, the end of Vietnam, start of Watergate, Roe versus Wade, Title IX, just an absolutely tumultuous and historic year of change. But the essence of the book, it's about how to reduce the barriers that intolerance puts up in our communities, and that's by getting people out and volunteering in your community to make it a better place, working side by side with people who are different than you. So that actually promotes tolerance.
So one of your theories in this book is that Bobby Riggs helped increase tolerance?
Bobby Riggs helped increase tolerance by having the guts to play a woman and getting his butt kicked at the Houston Astrodome. Which advanced the women's liberation movement by light years in the 2.5 hours it took to play that match.
And of course, we know deep down he loved women because
I have a lapel pin that says Bobby Riggs likes girls. So let's talk about books. All right, who's our guest tonight, Joe?
Tonight we have a phenomenal guest. It's a woman who runs the La Jolla Writers Conference, and her name is Antoinette Kuritz. Did I say that correct, Ann?
You said it correctly.
Welcome
to our show. So,
I've been having such fun listening to you guys. 1973 was my first year teaching.
Really?
Yeah.
You remember where you were when you saw that match, I take it?
Saratoga Springs, New York, in my big old Victorian.
Really?
Yeah.
We huddled around a small TV set because I saw it in a college dorm with a
little teeny black and white TV. Little teeny black and white TV.
That's amazing where, you know, as far as television.
That's the thing. People remember. They actually remember where they were when they saw that match.
Like, I do remember.
Where were you when Kennedy was shot? If you say, where were you during the Battle of the Sexes, everybody can say where they were, unless they weren't alive yet.
It was 19th South Street, Boston. I can take you right to the dorm room right now. So I know exactly where it was.
But, you know, when I went off to college, I went to a women's school. And for sports, we had skiing, we had horseback riding, we had tennis.
Really?
But we had a limited number of sports. After this match, sports for women in colleges expanded exponentially.
Title IX in action.
It was just amazing.
Americans dominated tennis for the next generation.
Yeah, we're going in the wrong direction now as far as Billie Jean King is concerned because the number of people playing, particularly young people, has dropped dramatically. That's why she's so inclined to use a team format.
But did you hear that when I believe, tell me if I misheard this, but did she say that 400 colleges and universities have dropped their tennis programs? I think I heard.
She said 400 have reduced the amount of their sports teams.
I thought they
had. But they do that on both the men's and the women's side.
Anyway, it's kind of sad.
It's sad.
I know we're challenged economically these days, but If you could see these junior nationals, these kids, I mean, they're 14 to 18. They're just having fun. They're much, you know, there's, you know, they don't see color. They don't see gender. They're just out there supporting each other. It's so refreshing because a lot of times in the news, you're hearing, you know, a lot of bad stuff that teens are doing. And
yeah, but the cool thing about Title IX is the 2012 Olympics, the U.S. won more medals than any other country. We had more female medal winners than we had male medal winners in
Correct.
This country. Those are the daughters of Title IX.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes, yes.
So it's amazing how all these events were sort of happening at the same time and how they each contributed to the momentum of the cause.
Absolutely.
Each standing alone wouldn't have done the job.
So why don't we turn to Antoinette and get a little bit of her background. And
who are you and why are you here?
Yes.
Well, I'm here because you invited me.
Okay.
And
Born, raised, education, all that in a nutshell.
Born, raised in New York, went to Skidmore College, came out here a long time ago, love San Diego. It's home now. I've lived here longer than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. It's magnificent. If people from other areas could just see our sky.
Mm-hmm.
Forget the beaches, just the sky. But that said...
the clouds were amazing today.
Mm-hmm. The clouds? Yeah, everything was beautiful today.
Yeah.
Just a gorgeous day. But that said, I got into the publishing industry in 1994 by working in a bookstore, started helping authors with PR on their
Back
books.
Back in New York? Or
no, here. Here, okay. And just started helping authors.
Which bookstore was that?
It was a major chain bookstore in Del Mar.
Okay.
And became the community relations manager, set up a program that became one of their three most successful in the country, and was stolen away by another chain store. And one day, a major author walked in. I had been asked many, many times to represent authors with PR, and I'd always send them to other people saying, oh, I don't know enough about it. And one day, an author walked in and said, what would it take for you to be my publicist? And I said, replace my salary and my benefits for a year. And he did, and my company was born.
Huh,
so I've been doing, I started out doing PR and marketing for authors, and we've grown into more of a project management kind of firm. We do the PR and marketing, but we take them through all the steps along the way because the business has evolved. Back in 2000, I saw the business starting to really, really evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started the La Jolla Writers Conference in 2001, we brought the business of writing into it because authors have to know the business if they're going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're understanding that now, aren't you?
I am. I'm getting the business, as Eddie Haskell used to say.
Yeah, you really are. And anyway, long story short, the La Jolla Writers Conference is entering its 13th year on November 1st to 3rd. I've been in business now with my business for 15 or 16 years. I lose count. And I love what I do.
What's the website for that?
It's LaJollaWritersConference.com and StrategiesPR.com.
Okay.
And you only made one mistake. That's being held at Paradise Point, not here at La Vie.
You don't have enough meeting rooms here.
I know.
You don't. And we have to...
Because you expect about 200 people, right?
Yeah. We won't take more than 200.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Really?
We'll keep it small.
Limited. That's great.
And everybody involved in our conference donates their time. Those of us who organize it and every single member of the faculty. In fact, our keynotes fly themselves in.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's pretty cool.
Any cool names that we should know about who are coming? Or
New York Times, number one New York Times bestselling author, Lisa Jackson, mm-hmm. Dale Brown, Chris Reich, Lissa Price, and the list goes on and on and on.
Great.
Oh, Jacqueline Michard, Oprah's first book club pick author.
Really?
Yeah.
So they can learn all about this at LaJollaWritersConference.com if they want more information. That's terrific. Hey, I think we have to take a break right there, don't we, Dan? Dan, I think let's take a break. We'll come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life live from La Vie in a couple of minutes. Hang on. All right, we're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life live from La Vie. Hey, Jonathan Courant is singing down in the La Sala Lounge tonight, in La Sala Lounge. Can't say the and la together, Richard.
Yeah, he just did that.
Yeah.
Introducing us. Hey, you guys, take out the, okay?
We're going to get that.
We'll get that fixed.
Anyway, grab your wife, your friend, your significant other. Come down here, have a glass of wine, and enjoy the beautiful scenery here and hear some great music. They're here. They have live music here every night of the week here at La Valencia, so check it out.
Good stuff. So, Antoinette, you were talking about the business of writing. Everybody I know wants to write a book. It's particularly, I think, epidemic among males about age of 50 who are having a midlife crisis, something they do. They either buy a motorcycle or write a book or both. Sometimes they write a book about buying a motorcycle. Well, why does everybody want to buy a book?
You mean why does everybody want
to write
a book?
Yeah.
Write a book. Write a motorcycle.
I know why everybody wants to buy my book because it's so good, but why does everybody want to write a book is what I'm trying to ask you.
Well, it's a means of expressing yourself. It's a means of validating what you believe, what you've done, what you think, Or you're just telling a story, you know, but people love to put pen to paper. There was a survey done in, I think it was 2001 by the Jenkins Group. It actually ran in the New York Times, and it showed that 81% of Americans thought they had a book in them. And with almost 3 million ISBNs, that's the code on the back of the book that mm-hmm. identifies the book,
mm-hmm.
almost 3 million of them issued last year, up from about under 100,000 at the turn of the century. I think we're moving towards everybody writing a book.
So I waited too long to write my book, you're telling me.
So you're saying 3 million Americans published a book last year. So
not quite, because now your book doesn't just come out in hard format.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And every format your book comes out in, whether it's, you know, the Kindle version,
right.
the Nook version,
right.
the iTunes version, the hard version,
right.
the audio version, that's 5 ISBNs right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
But let's just say one book, you know, the identical text in whatever form it is. So 3 million, a little under 3 million Americans have published a book last year.
Probably last year it was close to around 2 million. ISBNs issued,
mm-hmm.
probably about 2 million people published.
Wow.
Maybe a little more. That's a lot of books. And then you think of the backlist.
It's under 1%, though, right? I mean,
still, the competition is fierce. Competition to get on shows like this. You know, everybody has a book, is pitching themselves to media. How are you going to cover them?
Now, self-publishing today, let's say I want to write a book tomorrow, and I don't have a publisher or anything, but aren't there ways now you can just go on websites or somehow and get your book published?
Absolutely, and some of the major authors are now opting to self-publish.
Is that because they have more control?
They have more control. If you publish through a publishing house, generally, as an author, if you have a trade paperback, which is the large size paperback,
mm-hmm.
you get about 10% of the cover price when that book sells.
Mm-hmm.
The publisher gets 35%. You get a percentage of that. You end up with about 10% of the cover price. If you self-publish that book when it sells through traditional channels, you get that whole 35%.
Hmm.
The big thing is back of the room sales. If you're going to go out and you're going to be a speaker,
mm-hmm.
once you publish that book, you know, the first time through, you're paying for the design of the book and the editing of the book and the
mm-hmm.
cover design and everything else. But the second time through, the only thing you're paying for is the printing.
Mm-hmm.
And you can generally print a book for very little money.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the book costs you $2 to print, and that's pretty high for a trade paperback if you're
mm-hmm.
doing it in quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's $2 a book and you're selling it for $15. You're making $13 back-of-the-room sales,
mm-hmm.
whereas if you buy it from your publisher, you're generally going to spend 60% of that $15 to get that same book to sell back-of-the-room. So a lot of people who are out there speaking or have a reason to sell back-of-the-room or special market sales are self-publishing.
No, I know why MC Hammer sold his DVDs out of the trunk of his car.
The trunk of his car.
At Oakland Raider games. But
exactly.
And the rest was history.
So more people are writing books, but readers seem to have shorter attention spans. Are books getting shorter or longer, or what are they doing?
Chapters. When you're doing, particularly if you're doing nonfiction, it is suggested that you keep your chapters shorter. But even with fiction, if you look at the chapters, they're getting shorter so that people can take that break in between.
People are doing more e-books now. They're including audio, visual, all kinds of things along with text, right?
They are, and widgets. You have a guy coming on by the name of Bill Gladstone who's been behind so many of the developments in the publishing industry. Now he's getting behind widgets, which are devices put in e-books where the readers can interact with each other and with the author.
Really?
Yeah. So it really, books, e-books are becoming multimedia.
Now, Richard, since you overcame blindness, I certainly hope you consider having your book done in audio form as well. Have you thought of that yet? Or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, I want to do a book in Braille form.
Really? Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you can have this book translated into Braille form.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've already done some research on it.
Well, if you need a good voice to read this, just talk to me at the break. So.
Yeah, see Joe at the break. He'll read the whole thing out loud. Joe's become quite the expert on the history of 1973 just by hanging around with me.
Well,
you guys were kids in 1973. I was a grown-up.
I was 14 and 15 years old when I was working for Bobby Riggs. So.
And I was a little older than that.
Yeah, Joe was a little older than that.
I was 14 plus. about 10 years old.
And back then, there was only one form of book, and it looked just like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was all paper.
Mm-hmm. There are still people who, you know, even I swore I would never, ever give up my books, my hard books. I love mm-hmm. the smell and the feel and
mm-hmm.
and the whole sensibility of a book. And my family bought me a reader, an e-reader for
what'd you think?
The holidays. I got to tell you, it's real convenient.
Yeah, I got a Kindle two Christmases ago, and yeah. I like it a lot, although I still love physical books. There's something about holding a book.
I do too, but when I lie in bed at night and I'm reading off my Kindle, it's so much easier. It's just so much easier.
But there still must be a big market for the collectibles, the antiquarians, the rare books, right? There must be a...
Oh, yeah. My son deals rare books, particularly Churchill. And there's an enormous worldwide market for rare books.
Mm-hmm.
Enormous.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
So what's the future of bookstores, given that most people don't go in and look at things that are sitting on a shelf? I guess I could ask the same question. What's the future of libraries?
Well, libraries are transitioning. Libraries are multimedia now. They're, in fact, a lot of, in schools, they call libraries media centers.
Media centers,
now. Yeah.
Right.
Which just, I don't know, library has such a magical
I like librarian. You know, I don't want to be a media centarian or whatever it would be.
Media specialist.
Well, I do prefer the search engine to the card catalog, I will say.
But bookstores, I mean, what, because, you know,
you're always gonna have
you used
bookstores.
To see bookstores all over the place. Now you don't see bookstores anywhere.
So you're always going to have bookstores, and you're having a resurgence of the independent bookstores, which we predicted... I think 7 or 8 years ago. The reason is that people like to walk in and they like to talk to booksellers. The smart bookstores have now made arrangements with the ebook vendors where they can go on. If you come in and you talk to your favorite bookseller and your favorite bookseller says, well, I recommend this, this, and this for you, right then and there they'll go on the computer and they will sell you the ebook so that they are making money for selling that ebook to you. And so the smart bookstores are doing that.
Huh.
A lot of the independents are doing it through something called IndieBound because the independent bookstores have joined together. But they will also, you know, they go through Amazon, they go through whatever your e-reader prefers.
And I still think people love getting together for book signings and hearing the author, he or she speak, the expert on some particular topic.
The smart bookstores are still doing events. You know, when I was at Barnes & Noble, I was a community relations manager. We probably did... I don't know, 6 or 8 events a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved away from that format. Once they had shoved all the independents out, what happened was is they went into a different form with their community relations people were outselling corporately. They stopped the events. The independents are still doing events, and that draws people in.
We have to take a little break, though, right now, don't we, Dan? Let's take a break. New sports weather. We'll come right back with more It's Your Money, Your Life live from La Vie. Hang on. All right, we are back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life, live from La Vie. Over to Richard to thank all of our wonderful sponsors.
Thank you, sponsors, including and limited to lovely La Valencia, our major sponsor here. We're live from La Vie. I thought our master chef, Daniel Barron, was going to stop by and talk to us, but I guess not.
I guess he
got tied up by a pig.
I'll tell
Did you
they,
see the pig?
No, I saw the cut-up pig. I'll tell you, he said they're doing something here they do nowhere else. They actually had a pig that was raised in Julian, and it's been made into sausages and all kinds of things. There's some take up to a year to cure, and so I can't – he says somebody has to wait till the Café La Rue opens. But,
so I guess he's down there curing. So anyway, thank you to La Valencia.
Yes.
Just down the street, on the same side of the street, major sponsor UBS with Mr. Michael Quaranta and Drew Freitas. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Also, just on the other side of Prospect Street, I might as well just do this geographically, on the other side of the street from UBS, we have the best business bank in San Diego, Regents Bank, with Sean Puckett and Steve Sefton. They're actually going to be on, I believe, on August 17th, if memory serves.
Richard, are we working both sides of the street? I think
we're working both sides of the street.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's a two-way street here in La Jolla. Joel Grushkin and Cost Segregation Initiatives, helping real estate owners improve their cash flow. Best estate planning attorney of town, Mr. Rich Gaines. With Family Legacy Legal, he's going to be one of our guests next week, along with one of our other sponsors, Mr. Jason Kruger with Signature Analytics, the best CFO company here in San Diego. They're going to talk about how businesses can become more profitable and helping towards that end. Another one of our sponsors, Carl Sheeler with Business Valuations Limited, helping business owners increase the value of their businesses. And if you need to keep track of all of this stuff, you can call our favorite CPAs up in Vista, California, Polito Epic CPAs, Don Epic. And Paul Polito, after all, you've got to keep good records for income tax returns when you're making all that money. And they'll do a good job of that for you. And then also plug Courtney Lover with PopX Graphics, www.popxgraphics.com, who does a great job keeping our iymoney.com website going. And she's in here at La Vie just listening to the show after we had a nice dinner, after using my tennis tickets. It's been an exciting day for Courtney. So thank you to her as well. Joe, how can our wonderful listeners find out about our wonderful sponsor?
Well, if you just fire up your smartphone or whatever platform you're using and get on iymoney.com, click on sponsors. All of their professional background information is there, their contact information, and they've all been great professional colleagues of Richard for several years in business together on several projects. Right, Richard?
Oh, it's been a long time, longer than we care to remember. But this gray hair thing is no fun. So, Joe, you mentioned the word platform. I have a lot of internet. I have a lot of friends writing books, like I said. My buddy John Paul Olmsted, my buddy Mike Campos, they talk about their platforms. Joe just mentioned the word platform. What is a platform, and why do writers talk about platforms?
Well, they talk about platforms because whether you are self-publishing and you want a distributor, or you're going to an agent and you want to sell traditionally through a publishing house, the first question is going to be, what's your platform? Who's your audience, and how do you intend to reach them? Are you already reaching them? Are they already following you in some way, manner, or form? That's what agents want to know. That's what distributors want to know. And that's what sells your books. You know, you have a perfect platform. You have a radio show. And all of your listeners are part of your platform. But if you didn't have a radio show, you might be blogging. And then you might take that blog and you may go on a blog tour. You may reach out to other bloggers who have followings already and interview them. And then put the links to those interviews on your site. And put those interviews on your site and send them links that they put on their site. So their followers have a reason to come to your site. And what does that mean? It means you better have a really, really good website. For writers, it starts with the website. It's got to be dynamic. It's got to be constantly changing, and it has to have new content regularly. Mm-hmm. It has to have something to bring people back, and it has to have a really good, really clear call to action, whether it's that you want them to come to a seminar or listen to your radio show or buy your book. Whatever it is you want them to do, make it really, really clear and give them a reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what platform is all about. We build our platforms. You know, Facebook, a lot of people use Facebook and Twitter. I don't think it's really, I don't think Facebook and Twitter are all that effective anymore.
Well, there's so much clutter on there.
There's so much clutter.
I had a buddy Twitter me today that he's flying to Cleveland. I told him, well, if the plane crashes, you want it to crash before you get there, not after you leave, because it's Cleveland. But anyway, it's like, who wants to know this stuff?
After you leave Cleveland. Okay.
After you leave Cleveland, yeah.
Gotcha.
You don't want the plane to crash then because you had to spend 3 days in Cleveland.
Did you spend like five nights there? What is that?
But you're right. There's too much clutter. I don't care that he's going to Cleveland.
Am I
supposed to send my condolences? I'm sorry that you're going to Cleveland.
Spent 5 days there one night. I gotcha. Okay.
If
you're going to reach out to people, you really want to do it with a purpose that gives them a takeaway. You want to have something of value for them. You know, I do PR for authors. When I put them on the air, there had better be takeaways. They better be bringing value. Nobody wants to hear just about your book. They want to hear about something that they're going to find useful in their lives.
Well, you know what? We're going to podcast this interview, and it'll be on our website. And I got great news for you. We take out all the commercials, so you can hear it'll be just like public radio. And
then I can link to it, yes. And anybody who's on our site will come to your site. And that's what it's all about. It's all about giving people a reason to come to your site.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if somebody who has 100,000 followers, if you interview someone, a blogger with 100,000 followers, and only 10% of their people come to your site, so that's 10,000, mm-hmm. and then only 1% of them actually leave their data there, or only 10% of that leaves their data there, you still have 1,000 more people than you had before.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what are the takeaways that people are going to get who attend the La Jolla Writers Conference? What's the value for them?
First of all, they'll be energized about their writing. They'll learn more about the art, craft, and business of writing. They'll learn a lot that they don't readily know. They'll learn what to look out for if they're going to self-publish. They'll learn about all the ways to publish, because you can do self-publishing, cooperative publishing. You can do online publishing, e-book. You can publish just an e-book. You can do an e-book with multimedia in it. You can go the traditional route. I mean, there are so many routes to publication today. How do you decide? You learn about how to decide what the best way of publication is for you. We do a media training class that gives you a sense of what it is that you need to bring when you're on air. And we do a lower-level media training class that tells you how to pitch media.
Mm-hmm.
Because what people do, authors do, is they'll go out and they'll buy lists for a lot of money, and they'll sit on their desks for 5 or 6 weeks, and then they'll start pitching radio. And they'll call you, the producer of a radio show, and go, "Hi, my name is Joe, and I have a book." Right away, what does that say to you? It says, I'm not going to put that person
right.
on the
I'm
air.
Not put the person
right.
on the air.
Yeah. And so we teach them how to approach the media so that they don't bore the media in the first 5 seconds. And then we teach about the art and craft of writing. We've got wonderful writers who teach that, and we have agents who talk about how to write a query letter and how to do a book proposal, and we have editors and all kinds of people.
Marketing is so important. I mean, we've all met very talented people who are bad marketers, and they don't get discovered. It seems to be that the people who are the better marketers, they might even be second-tier talent, but the ones who know how to market effectively usually are the ones that are more successful.
And there's a nuance to marketing. You really don't want to hit people over the head with who you are and what you've got.
Mm-hmm.
By the same token, you've got to be out there, and you've got to know what's trending. I mean, marketing a book now is incredibly different than it was just 4 or 5 years ago.
And the real challenge is, because for most writers, I would think it's a pretty solitary existence, and there's not a lot of human interaction, so you've got to get to those extroversion skills going, I guess, somehow. So
certainly fiction writers.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly fiction writers do.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell fiction, what I say to people who, nonfiction writers, I say to them, the first thing you need to do when you get an idea for a book is sit down and write the marketing plan component of your book proposal. And they say to me, some of them will say to me, well, I'm going to self-publish. I don't need a book proposal. And I'll say to them, yes, you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's functionally your business plan. So sit down and write that business plan for your book and see whether or not the book is going to work.
You have to find an audience for your book or you're not going to sell it. But maybe some people don't care. I don't know. Maybe
so, do you help writers then with things like team building and collaboration? Because I've learned from writing this book that I have coming out here shortly that I, like Hillary Clinton said, it takes a village. Took a lot of people to help me get to the finish line, which I was very appreciative of. But I figured I have to assume a lot of these writers don't really have that kind of network or those relationships in place. Do you assist with helping them form those?
Yeah, we do. That's in my day job. And we do it at the La Jolla Writers Conference, too. But we'll take a writer with an idea for a book, help them decide the best way of publication, and then put them in touch with the people that they need to have on their team in order to do the best job of publishing that book and getting it out there. And if you're going to write a book, start building the platform for that book as soon as you get the idea for it. Don't wait until the book is published. Books in a bookstore, and thank heavens, bookstores are no longer all that important to books. But books in a bookstore have a shelf life somewhere between milk and yogurt. You know, if a book isn't selling in 4 to 6 weeks, it's returned. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, if you get a buy into the bookstores, you better have sown that ground in advance. The other thing, people will come to me and they'll say, well, all I want is to be on the New York Times list. That's what I want. I want to be on the New York Times list. And they have no idea that getting on the New York Times list has nothing to do with sell-through. You could be on the New York Times list and not one consumer has bought your book.
Mm-hmm. How would that work?
It's the number of books ordered by the stores and the number of books ordered by Amazon and Ingram and BarnesandNoble.com. What they're stocking up for is what will determine what's on the New York Times list.
Hmm.
Now, one of the things we tell authors to do is get your book up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Books A Million and IndieBound.com well in advance of the publication date, and then start doing lots of media and lots of blog tour, so that what you end up doing is pre-selling your book, and then the stores and all the vendors look at that and go, wow, this book is already moving. There are pre-sales on this book.
Kind of like what George Takei did with his play Allegiance. He's out there marketing it in advance of it opening. And, of course,
uh-huh.
he already has the great following on Facebook.
Yeah, about 3.6 million followers. Not bad. Nice job there, George.
Might be over 4.2. But who's
counting?
Yeah,
it goes up every day.
I have a question for you. Did you get a blurb on your book from Billie Jean King?
Well, she hasn't read it yet, but she said she'd read it on the plane ride back to New York.
Wouldn't it be splendid if she gave you a blurb?
So I'm going to follow up on that. But hey, wait a minute. I'm asking the questions here.
No, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
We need a Billie Jean King blurb.
That's a fair assumption that maybe somebody should read the thing first before they say how great it is.
Yeah.
She's seen the scrapbooks that I built that she's very much prominently portrayed in, so she knows that I'm all about quality, or at least I was 40 years ago when I was 14 and 15.
Well, now, we interviewed her just Wednesday,
16 minutes.
And,
great interview with Billie Jean.
Well, it was 20, but we took the best 16. It's on our website, iymoney.com, so you'll hear if you want to go over there and hear that. But I think Courtney told us at dinner that she hit some kind of favorable button on it on her Twitter or something. I don't follow this stuff on the Twitter that much, but... What was it, Courtney? What did she hit? She made it a favorite. She favored it.
She favored it.
She liked it.
Yeah.
Like Sally Field. They really liked me.
Really liked me.
That can do a lot.
I think so.
That can do a lot.
Well, she's pretty influential, that's for darn sure.
I'll tell you, she's pretty darn influential.
Yes.
All right, can we talk about self-publishing for a minute?
Yes.
Okay, a lot of people are self-publishing these days. And the problem is with so many people self-publishing, an awful lot of people hang out their shingle as experts. They're experts, they're editors, there are interior designers, cover designers, people who call themselves book shepherds. And there is a very wide variety, a wide span of what they're going to charge you to do things. If you are going to self-publish a book, unless you're a terrible writer and really, really need intensive editing, from start to finish, that book should cost you somewhere in the area of $12,500, and you should have between 1 and 3,000 copies in your hand.
Wow.
Okay? And I give that as a rule of thumb because your cover shouldn't cost more than about $1,750 to $2,000, and all the figures I'm giving you are very high.
Mm-hmm.
Interior design, unless you are doing graphs and charts and all kinds of things, traditional interior design shouldn't be more than about $6 a page. So there are standardized numbers that you need to look at. And the other thing is if somebody says to you that they want to do this, that, or the other for you, ask them what they've done before and take a look at what they've done.
Hmm.
And call their previous clients. Because there's no vetting in this mm-hmm. business.
Gotcha. Hey, Dan, I think we have to take another break, don't we? Let's take a little break. We'll come right back more for our last segment, Venture Money and Your Life, live from La Vie. Stay tuned.
Now, live from the La Valencia Hotel, it's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
All right, we're back with the last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life live from La Vie. I'm talking fast because we only have 3 minutes left, but welcome back Antoinette Kuritz, who heads the La Jolla Writers Conference. And what should we cover in this last segment, Richard?
Well, the first thing I want to mention, even though that's her married name, her maiden name is Musco, M-U-S-C-O, so we are probably related somehow because we're not exactly famous for knowing how to spell, even though we know how to write. But anyway, writers' conferences. Are there a lot of writers' conferences in the country or not very many? And how do they compare and contrast to what you're doing?
There are probably at least 1,500 still around in the country.
Wow, it's a lot.
There are a lot of good ones. A lot of good ones. But what we do is we cover the art, craft, and business of writing. We teach people about how to decide the best road to publication for them. We teach them about self-publishing. We teach them about doing media and building their platform. And we have a full complement of courses on the art and craft of writing. So we do a pretty good job.
And it's great networking, right? I mean,
wonderful networking. We have had so many attendees published. We've got a cop out of Las Vegas who's had 3 books with St. Martin's now.
Really?
We've got an awful lot of our attendees have a good average
and
of
a lot,
attendees.
And a lot come back because I guess they like San Diego, too.
They do come back. Mm-hmm. And we this year, for the first time, we have a former student who's going to be teaching, which is really kind of cool.
And you mentioned you don't really run this, excuse me, as a profit center. Do a lot of these conferences charge people an arm and a leg to attend?
Yeah, a lot do. We're very, very inexpensive. We are at a really nice venue. We would be here, but they don't have enough meeting rooms.
Well, the reconstruction isn't finished yet,
yeah.
So maybe next year.
But we are at a very, very nice venue, and we provide 3 meals, and it's $385.
Oh,
so
wow.
You can imagine that we don't make any money.
You don't even charge a finger, let alone an arm or a leg.
No, it's
a labor of love.
It's a labor of love, and it goes almost around the clock. Classes stop at around 2 in the morning and start again at 7 a.m.
Oh, my gosh.
Hey, so let's assume somebody who's listening wants to write a book. What's the best piece of advice you can get them?
Put your bottom in a chair and write. carve out the time to write. Own the time and make it consistent every day. Know that I don't care if it's from 4 to 4:20 in the morning every day. Whatever it is, find the time to
write. That's what I had to do with my book. But, so much personal experience, so much 1973 history, there's no way to use a ghostwriter, for example, at least on the first go-round, because I had to sit down every day and write.
You have to, because if you stop, even for a day, it's like exercise. If you stop for a day, you find another reason to stop tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down every single day. and right.
And that's a good place to stop right now because we are out of time. But Antoinette, thank you so much for being our guest. Get over to LaJollaWritersConference.com. Richard Musio, thank you. Have a great
week. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks to Craig Blanker, account executive, and thanks to Dan Noonan in the studio, our engineer, making us sound great.
And Craig, thanks for the tennis tickets on Friday.
That's right. And thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius. And get over to Legends. The Dr. Seuss show ends tomorrow. So get over and see the great Dr. Seuss stuff. You have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next week.